Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live in the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios. So Charles Robinson was on Robbie and Retro today, Yahoo Sports Senior NFL Insider, and he was asked about the J.J. McCarthy smoke. Now, I believe quarterback goes one, quarterback goes two, quarterback goes three. Caleb Williams goes one to Chicago. Washington picks between Drake May and Jaden Daniels. I think ultimately they're going to pick May. Whoever doesn't go second goes third to New England. And I think that's pretty much set in stone. Then there's four. Arizona has already said we want to trade out. And J.J. McCarthy apparently seems to be the fourth quarterback. And while I watched Michigan play football this year and I never watched a Michigan football game and thought, damn, look at that quarterback. Clearly, there is some real heat with J.J. because Mike Tannenbaum put out a mock draft yesterday. And in his mock draft, former NFL GM, he has J.J. McCarthy going fourth overall to Arizona. Meanwhile, Rick Spielman, the old Vikings general manager, does work for SiriusXM and CBS, and he is hot for J.J. McCarthy. And we know that Minnesota is interested in a quarterback because they acquired a second first-round pick once they knew that Kirk Cousins was going to Atlanta. So Charles Robinson was on Robbie and Rex Road today, and he was explaining where he has heard all of this J.J. McCarthy heat and where it's been coming from.
So when I start calling around, I'm asking, like, where is this coming from? A number of personnel guys are like pointing a finger at Harbaugh. They're like, the guy won't shut up about the kid. Every time he sits down and someone puts a mic in his face, he's saying J.J. McCarthy this, J.J. McCarthy that, he's the best quarterback in the draft, like all these different things. And there's a very strong suggestion that a lot of this stuff that's coming out about McCarthy is Harbaugh behind the scenes pushing it. And everybody's like, hey, isn't it convenient that every quarterback that goes in front of him is a good thing for his team? You know, all of a sudden he's sitting at five and every single thing, like he needs everything except for quarterback. And at five, if he can get four quarterbacks drafted in front of him, everything's going to be there for him.
Okay. Who's the expert on J.J. McCarthy? It's Jim Harbaugh. Who benefits the most by J.J. McCarthy being hyped up? It's Jim Harbaugh. And I've run the numbers, and I've looked at Minnesota at 11, and I've thought to myself, you know, Minnesota could make this trade, and they would actually, if they dealt the two first-round picks to move up to five to draft J.J. McCarthy or to move up to four, technically they would be, with 11 and 23, they would be giving up value in order to make that move to get the quarterback. And if you're a team that's trading up in a draft, you're giving up value. What you're saying is, we value the player more than the pick, so we're going to make this trade so that it's not necessarily equal. In fact, it might be a little bit more than that, and we're going to make sure we get this player. But I don't know if they have to do that. And here's why. And here's where you come in. I texted Matthew Collar. Now, we had Collar on at the Super Bowl, and Collar covers the Vikings on the day-to-day, but he wrote that book about the analytics of football. And, Ian, I thought it was going to be kind of a shouting match between me and him when he came on at the Super Bowl to talk about analytics. And not only was it not a shouting match, but he and I are actually, like, I would consider ourselves buds.
Cool.
Because we talked a bunch after he was on the air that day. Then we hung out at the Sirius Suite, and then, like, we were down at the lobby of the hotel at 3 in the morning at the Luxor one day and just chatting it up. Anywho, I texted a caller, and I said, are the Vikings going to trade up to 7 for J.J. McCarthy and give up both firsts? And caller told me and said they're more likely to trade up to 4 or 5. And I said, I just don't think anybody's going to take J.J. McCarthy that high. I think, okay, McCarthy's a first-round quarterback. Got it. 4 over Marvin Harrison? And Collar said, I have felt that way too. Maybe he's the guy whose draft stock ends up being faked the whole time. But I don't think Minnesota trades for that second round pick if they're not interested in a quarterback. So I think a couple of things can be true here. Number one, I think Harbaugh is trying to get the two picks from the Vikings. I think, and again, looking at the trade chart and the value, the move from 5 to 11, you know, the fifth pick is valued at 1,700 points. 11 plus 23 equals 2,000 points. So you're talking about gaining 300 points if you're the Chargers, which is roughly a mid-second round pick. So if you're the Chargers, you can do this, and instead of maybe drafting one of these receivers, you can get Talese Fuaga at 11 to play right tackle, and then still get a really good player at receiver at 23 in what is a very deep receiver class. But here's where the Titans actually make a little bit of sense. And that is, again, let's think about the relationships here, and let's think about what Minnesota wants. Minnesota wants J.J. McCarthy. They want to make sure they can get J.J. McCarthy. Where they reside in the draft, Denver behind them, Vegas behind them, New Orleans behind them, and Seattle two picks behind New Orleans could all be interested in a young quarterback. So what Minnesota has to figure out is, where do we have to get in order to get J.J.? We've got the two first-rounders. If we wanted to move to four, the chart says we've got enough firepower to get from 11 to four. But do we really want to just give up these two first-rounders? And this is where the Titans come in. First of all, there is a relationship there between Rand Carthon and between Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager in Minnesota. They were both together in San Francisco. Secondly, the Titans could do something with this that the Chargers could not, or maybe the Chargers will not. And that is, in order to make this an even trade, Minnesota could give up 11 and 23, and they could get to 7. But you'd have to give back 38, and you'd get 108, which is a fourth rounder from them. We talk about all the holes and not having enough picks, so in this instance, you would be picking up an extra fourth round pick. But you still may be able to get your left tackle at 11. They may be able to get J.J., but instead of just giving up the two first-rounders to get J.J., they give up the two first-rounders to get J.J., get back the 38th pick, and you get a second first-rounder, which means two things. Number one, it means that before this run on tackles or receivers goes down, you could, in theory, trade back to 11, get that second first-round pick, and walk out of that first round with J.C. Latham at right tackle at 11 and Amarius Mims at left tackle at 23. But it also means that they would have to be comfortable that J.J. would be there at 7. And I think that's kind of the whole guessing game that they've got a month to figure out here. But I wouldn't rule the Titans out. And I think that's a trade I would make. Again, this would be a prearranged trade on draft night, which is, if Joe Alt's not there and Minnesota calls and I'm at 7, they're offering 11 and 23. I give back 38, but I also pick up 108 as a fourth round pick. I think I'd probably do it. So I'm trying to figure out what's actually real. And if Harbaugh is the one who's hyping up J.J., and it's not Denver who's going to jump up there, and it's not New Orleans who's going to jump up there, then maybe Minnesota says, well, we don't have to give everything up in order to be able to get J.J. McCarthy. We can make a more fair deal with Tennessee, move up to 7, and still get J.J. McCarthy. But that's just something to keep in mind. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025 here if you want to weigh in on that. I do have a Predators thought, because today I went down the rabbit hole of first-round playoff opponents, and we'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game.
But Tyler, why would we not start with the hottest team right now on the planet? We're talking about the Nashville Predators.
Scott, before we get going in our tour around the NHL, I have a question for you. Is it possible the Nashville Predators finish third place in the Central Division. Like, they're 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets now. They each have 10 games left. Like, if this streak keeps going, Scotty, like, can you see the Predators finishing third in their division after all this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking the same thing last night. Is there enough runway to cover here for the Preds to make up this ground? So we'll get to the details of it. But ultimately, like you say, 10 games left to play for each squad. And that 4-point bulge doesn't seem to be insurmountable at this point, given the way each team is trending. Now, I made a joke recently. I said, okay, 14-0-2, there's no way they're going to finish up the season going 26-0-2. I don't know. I mean, the way this team is playing.
There you go. That was NHL Network Radio this morning. They're like, I mean, could the Predators win out the rest of the way? I mean, who knows? So I went down the rabbit hole this morning of just looking at the remaining schedules and looking about. And so if you look at the standings right now, Winnipeg has 94 points. They've got 10 games left. The Predators have 90 points. They have 10 games left. But here's what's crazy. Winnipeg plays 6 games, including Vegas tonight. 6 games of their 10 are against playoff teams. The Predators, 3. So the Predators are 4 points back, which is, as we all know, 2 games. Well, today, Winnipeg plays Vegas. You play Arizona, who sucks. You should win. Then you play Winnipeg in another game, which is another one of these point swings. It is very likely that the Predators can catch up with Winnipeg. But then as I saw that, I thought, well, wait a minute. Do I want that to happen? Because right now Colorado has 97 points. They're in second place in the Central Division. And everybody, Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, everybody is telling me that the Predators do not want to play Colorado in the first round of the playoffs. But because, again, Dallas has 4 games left against playoff teams. Colorado has 7 games left, including the Rangers tonight. That actually should be a pretty good game. Colorado has 7 games left against playoff opponents. It seems rather likely that Colorado will finish second in the Central Division. So if you catch Winnipeg and you finish third, you go to Colorado, who again, Vingan and Robbie and all the hockey gurus are telling me, yeah, that wouldn't be very good for the Predators. So here's what I, as I kept like trying to put the numbers together to see where you would finish and everything else, I said, okay, forget about that. I said, what are my priorities for the Predators entering the playoffs? And my number one priority is to stay in the Central Division no matter what. Because staying in the Central Division allows 2 things. Number one, it avoids the West Coast travel. Now, that'll change a little bit if you have to play Winnipeg in the second round. But for right now, it avoids that long West Coast travel. Denver's an easy flight from Nashville. And then secondly, it avoids Edmonton, which is the one team that I think is by far the worst matchup for the Predators. And I just don't think that the Predators can beat them. So I think you want the Predators to catch Winnipeg, even if that means playing Colorado in the first round. The 3 priorities I have. Number 1, stay in the Central. Number 2, avoid Edmonton. Number 3, get Dallas or Winnipeg in the first round. You can't have everything your way all the time. And there is a part of me that wonders if playing Colorado in the first round might be your best opportunity for 2 reasons. Number 1, you can go to Colorado and steal one of those 2 games and kind of put them on their heels a little bit. But also, we know that if you're going to make a run in the Stanley Cup playoffs, depth is going to be a very important aspect of that run because guys are going to get hurt. When we would assume that the Predators are at their freshest would be, I think, right at the beginning of the playoffs. So go ahead, and if you're going to beat Colorado, beat them on the front end. But man, did I go through the rabbit hole. Here's what I think is going to happen. So I think Dallas is going to be the first seed in the Central Division, which means Colorado is going to be number 2, Nashville is going to be number 3, and Winnipeg is going to be number four, and they are going to be the first wild card team. Now, Dallas has 99 points with 9 games remaining, Vancouver 98 with 10 games remaining, and Vancouver plays 5 playoff teams. By the way, Ian, do you know who Dallas plays tonight?
No, I don't.
At Vancouver.
Okay.
So here's what's important about this. If Vancouver wins, I think it is probably more likely than not that they end up as the number one seed in the West, which means that in that case, Winnipeg would draw into your division playing Dallas in the first round. I think your best bet to get to the cup final might be playing Colorado in that first. I mean, the best bet is Dallas. You know, you want Dallas to lose, Dallas to finish in second place, Colorado to finish in first place, you to finish in third place, and you get Dallas in the first round. But I think your second best bet would be just get Colorado on the front end and go to war in that first round. And if you can get past them, good, because then you've got Dallas or Winnipeg, two teams I think you would be favored against in the second round. And you would avoid Edmonton and the West Coast travel. So I guess we got a scoreboard watch here, and there's no way to know what's going to happen in the end. But I tell you, I think that the way I'm looking at it right now, I think I'm rooting against Dallas, rooting for Colorado, because I think you're going to catch Winnipeg. John says, so if the Predators play Colorado in the first round and lose, then Joe's prediction of a first-round seven-game series would be spot on. Joe's prediction was a seven-game series first-round loss to Dallas. First of all, Joe's prediction could be right. I just think that it's hard for me to envision the way the Predators have been playing. It's hard for me to envision the Predators losing 4 out of 7. Which is what it would take for them to lose in the first round of the playoffs. I'm not saying it's impossible for me to see that happening. It would be hard for me to see that. And that might be another reason why you want Colorado on the front end. Because you're still on that heater, and maybe you stay on that heater through the rest of the regular season, and you get Colorado, and you're still hot, and you're still healthy, and you're not worn down from travel, and maybe that might be the reason why. The other thing, too, is, again, the Adam Vingan stat, which was 8 teams have had point streaks of 17 games or more over the last 15 years. You're the 9th team. Of those 8 teams, 2 won the Cup, 2 lost the Cup, 2 lost in the conference final, 1 lost in the first round, 1 lost in the second round. The odds tell you that if you're good enough to pull off this kind of streak, you are far more likely to get into the cup final at a 50% clip than you are to lose in the first round at whatever 1/8 is. What is that? 12.5? I think that's right. So I have a hard time with Joe's prediction just because the math doesn't necessarily check out. Mike says, can we just go back to traditional seating already? Ian, what is traditional? I don't even remember traditional.
The 1 through 8, just like the NBA. Not the whole, you know, 3-2 wild card.
I think the NHL playoffs, I think it's bull crap.
The 1 through 8 thing works much better. The whole, you know, the way they went to the whole, this new playoff format and the whole bracket situation. And
what was the point of doing that?
I'm not totally sure.
Wasn't it to avoid... Like, so here's what I think it is. I think the reason they went to this is for start times. Because what they don't want is in 1 through 8, you're incredibly likely in the Western Conference to have Chicago and San Jose on the same day that you have LA and Nashville and Minnesota and...
Yeah, but that doesn't matter in the Eastern Conference. You know?
No, but it matters in the West.
Yeah.
So what you do by doing this is you're guaranteed that you're going to have one Central start time and you're going to have one Western start time, and you're probably more likely than not to have 2 Centrals and 2 Westerns, or I guess Pacifics, 2 Centrals and 2 Pacifics, as opposed to
but they just throw the Centrals
four uneven series.
They just throw the Centrals at 8:45 local time anyways.
They do that all the time, and it drives me crazy.
So, sure, it's Central, but it might as well be West Coast.
But isn't there another game that usually comes on after the 8:30 starts?
There's usually two. It's like, what, 7, 7:30, and then like 8:45 and 9 or 9:30, something like that. Those are all Central times, I think. Or maybe it's 6 and 6:30, and then 8:45 and 9, something like that.
One texter says the new playoff format was because they went from 6 divisions to 4 divisions. You could still do the 1 through 8.
I'm not sure. I can't remember the rationale for the time. I don't know if it was a geography thing, a timing thing, a
so Grant says that
rivalry
they
thing.
They claim to create more of a rivalry thing
yeah,
with that.
I think that
I
was
just think
bogus.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, you don't need to create more rivalries. You guys play in the division already. Like, what are you trying to do?
I mean, I think it's so stupid anyways. I mean, again, but to
and then they
the,
got obsessed with the whole bracket. You know, they don't want to reseed. They started getting all, yeah. I remember that, starting with the brackets and people filling out their bracket like it's madness.
Oh, I remember they were always like pumping that like NHL.com bracket challenge. And I'm like, guys, nobody
cares.
Here's the thing hockey's got to understand. And I think they understand it. Like, I mean, again, like I wouldn't say that I know Gary Bettman, but I've had him on enough and spent like enough time just chatting with him off the air, on the air to like get a feel for, like, I don't think Gary Bettman's an idiot. And so my gut tells me is Gary Bettman probably knows this. The truth is that on a national level, hockey doesn't play. Like, it just doesn't play. Like, I can't go on Sirius XM and talk about hockey. There's a channel for that, and that is for the niche hockey NHL person. But when you have a good team in a local market, it is addicting, especially in the playoffs. And I don't care if that market is a traditional, my granddaddy grew up rooting for Montreal, or if it's Vegas, who's been around for 5 years. If you're good, it is addicting on the local level. And so this idea of like, we want to foster rivalries and we want to have national bracket challenges and we want to just stop. You don't need any of that. You got all your games on ESPN Plus anyways. You can't even watch some of them. I mean, it's just whatever. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Hal Gill joins us next. His thoughts on the point streak and the rest of the way. We'll do that. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game. Right here, Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game. You know, I used to look forward to these Hal Gill interviews when the Predators weren't winning every single night, when they had a coach that I didn't think was this incredible coach that they have now, because it allowed me to really put the gloves on and spar and dominate my opponent. And instead, now everything's going great. I just don't know what to do anymore. Hal Gill joins us on the program from Arizona, presented by Dunkin'. Hal will be on the call tonight as the Predators take on the Arizona Coyotes. Hal, I mean, just when I think that this 17-game point streak was good enough, and I think everything's rolling in the right direction and everything else, I feel like, okay, here's the dud. It was nice while it lasted, and this team did not quit. They come from behind, and what I thought was one of the more exciting games I can remember in Bridgestone Arena history. This team, just every time, every game, it feels like there's a whole nother level of wow that they seem to hit. Your thoughts?
Yeah, hey, if you weren't blown away by that one, then there's something wrong with you. That building was nuts, and what a great comeback. And it's impressive. And this whole streak that they've had, that was the only game they trailed in. I think it's 16 minutes total over 17 games that they were trailing. That's bizarre. And so just the fact that they proved to themselves that they could come back and get into it and find a win when – and remember, that's against Vegas. That's not just like a team that, hey, they were playing well and then didn't at the end of the game. That's Vegas. And I know they're on a back-to-back, but that's a lockdown team. Big defenseman that they're able to get into the interior and have a huge third on. That's impressive.
Hal, when I sat there and I watched Vegas the other night, to your point about them, they were so fast on the ice, at least from where I was sitting. It reminded me, were you on the team in 2011, the year the team got to the second round, played Vancouver?
No.
So I don't know if you remember those Vancouver teams. The team that was really good and got to the seventh game and lost in the cup final. And like it reminded me of that. Like that level of speed from guys like Eichel and Hanifin and, you know, some of the additions they've made over the years with some of the players they already had. And yet, outside of the first 10 minutes, where I thought that, you know, they lost a puck battle and Lausanne, you know, ends up losing it and it sets up the second goal. And outside of that, they still hung with a team that I think might have more talent than them. And I was prepared at 4-2 to come on the air the next day and say, look, I know that they got run in the first 10 minutes and they lost 4-2, but they just didn't bury some chances and they hung right there with them. Instead, they still won the game. It's like they can outplay teams that are more talented than them, and I don't know exactly where that comes from. Where does it?
Yeah, well, Vegas, to your point with Vegas, yeah, they got Eichel, who's a level talent. They have depth up and down the forward lineup, but their D are big and they're mobile and really tough to play against. That's in my opinion, that's why they won the cup last year, is because of that defensive unit. They're big and strong, and the Preds, you know, to be able to come back against those guys and compete with them and get to the middle the way they did at the end of the game is remarkable. That's just a sign of where this team is at. And hey, like, would anyone been surprised if they just kind of, hey, it wasn't our night. We kind of, you know, we didn't have a good first period. And like you said, you would have said, hey, it's a tough game, but that didn't sit well with them. And they came back and gave a push. And talking to them after, you listen to every guy, they said, yeah, we really didn't have any panic. We knew we had to play better and we were just going out. And I think, I used to hate it when coaches always said, worry about the process and not the result. And I think, you know, in looking back at that game, I think Bruno and the leadership and the players up and down the lineup said, let's go play the right way and see what happens. And they did it, and they get the win.
Hal Gill is with us, presented by Duncan. Hal, I hate rental players at the trade deadline. And it's not that I hate the players. I just hate how, like, fans get so excited and a team will deal a first-round pick for a rental. And it's like that first round pick is that player that you're acquiring is not the difference usually in whether or not you go to the cup final or not. But I think Jason Zucker has been a fabulous addition to what they've had. And I looked it up at the stats yesterday and I saw he's only got 3 points so far. And I said, that can't be right. I mean, I feel his impact out there on the ice. They gave up nothing to get him. It seems like he's fit in perfectly personality-wise, though you would know more about that than me, but he's a big body with experience, and he's played in big games. I think this has been a great addition for the Predators.
Yeah, he's got that feisty battle mentality. He's quick. He's slippery in the corners. I know points, you know, you want a guy that's going to put up some points, and so maybe he hasn't done that, but he they go into Florida, and Florida, which is a team that goes in and bullies guys and bullies teams. He stood up and went toe-to-toe with Cousins and settled an old score, but I think the team got to see what he's all about, the way he plays and competes, and that kind of tenacity and the fight. You know, I feel like there's so many times you see him on the forecheck where maybe he's not going to get there, but he affects the play, and then he's reloading and coming back and adding to the play after that. So I really like what he's brought. I just think it's sometimes it takes a little time to get into a system, especially Bruno's system, which seems to be a little bit tougher to adapt to than other systems. And I think he's done that well, and he's just going to get better.
Hal Gill is with us, presented by Duncan. When we talk playoffs, Hal, you know, we're still about 3 weeks out from the start of the playoffs. What do you feel like you want to see from the Predators between now and the playoffs that would make you feel like, okay, this team is ready to go and ready to make a run?
Yeah, well, you kind of hit on it. I think you were talking to Trotsky and talked about what he would like to see. And it's special teams. I think the penalty kill has been really good, and they've gotten some big penalty kills. And the power play, they need to click more efficiently. And I think they're looking for more impact with the power play throughout the game. Now, I will say the bright spot is that when they need a kill at the end of a game, when they're locking down a win, they're getting the kill. They're getting the timely kills and the power play. You know, you look at that last game, you know, you get a power play and Nyquist snipes it. And I feel like that power play was the most tenacious I've seen our power play look. You know, they did it, I believe it was in St. Louis, in Minnesota. They, in order to tie that game, to bring that to overtime, they had a big goal from Ryan O'Reilly on the power play. And you know, I think when you're looking at timely scoring, that's there. They just need to be a little more consistent throughout the game, because going down the stretch and certainly in the playoffs, you can't just count on your power play when you need them. You need them to put some separation in a game, and penalty kill needs to be the same way. So I like what they're doing. It just needs to impact the game more through a 60-minute span.
Hal, to your point about the power play, did you think that when they went on the power play the other night that they were going to score? Because I did.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think you have that belief that you can do it. Now, why wouldn't you have that belief in the first period when they get a power play and they toss it around and they don't get in on the entries and they don't get – like, that's the whole thing. You need to have that killer mindset where, okay, we have a power play any time in the game. This puck's going in the back of the net. And I think they have that when they need it. They just need to they need to realize that they need it more often. And that's going to be a game changer, because a 5-on-5 game is – you know, it's as good as anyone in the NHL right now. Just four
lines
rolling over.
So what I loved, though, to your point, what I loved about the power play there, like, first of all, I sat there during that review, and I thought, if this goal stands, Predators are going to win, because they're going to score on this power play. And I think Bruce Cassidy, you know, I'd be getting down pretty hard on my video guy for challenging that play, even though Zucker probably was offside. You know, it was so close that I would not have taken the risk of putting the Predators on the power play there. But on that power play, Hal, they were so good at keeping the puck and not letting Vegas get possession of it, fire it down to the other end, and kind of break up the momentum. And it's like they are firing the puck across the ice, and they're taking passes that you have to be really skilled in order to be able to make. And it sets up guys like Nyquist's shot or whatever. It's like I've never seen the Predators in all my years of watching them be able to maintain the puck in the offensive zone as well as this group has over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think what they do really well is, and I think that top line, you know, O'Reilly kind of sets this tone. He doesn't just throw pucks away. Like he'll maintain possession. If he loses it, he's the first guy back picking up a stick and making a and continuing to play and getting the puck back. And it's just that tenacious. You know, they're saying relentless. I think when their power play is good, they're relentless on pucks. They put it to the net and they create chaos. And you could see Vegas was, you know, chasing the puck, and they felt like they had it. And then, you know, Riley's picking up a stick and keeping a play alive. And then Forsberg's doing it. And it's those teams are, you know, those are the teams that I hated playing against. You want a skill player that just kind of turns away and says, we'll get him next time. You know, and those guys that continue to battle and work for pucks, those are the ones that are really hard to play against. And that's what you're seeing right now. That just needs to be more the norm during the rest of the game.
Hal Gill will be on the call tonight. It's a late one at 9:00. The Predators go for points in 19 straight. Hal, great stuff. Appreciate you as always.
Sounds good. Enjoy the game tonight. Go get the dunks and stay up late with me.
There you go. Presented by Duncan. Hal Gill joining us on the program. I promise tickets for Tuesday night against the Bruins. Now would be your cue to call. I gave you a code word earlier. Don't call if you don't know the code word. 615-737-1025. And if you're the first one that knows the code words for Ian, you'll be going to the game to see the Predators take on the Bruins. Good luck on that front. Let's talk about Window Nation. March is a critical time to check your home's windows. If yours are cracked or leaking and they won't open or stay open, then it is time to call the pros at Window Nation. Because right now, it's more affordable than you think to get those windows fixed finally. Because right now, for every two windows you'll buy, you'll get two windows free, plus zero down, zero interest, and no payments for 24 months. With proven quality and service, it's no wonder why thousands trust Window Nation. So do not miss out. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. Again, that's for every two windows you buy, you'll get two free, zero down, zero interest, and no payments for 24 months. That's 866-90-NATION, windownation.com, and schedule that free in-home estimate today. There you go. Predators Game Day is presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, online at tjandersonhomes.com. Get your house seen, heard, and sold with my realtor. That's TJ Anderson. Tonight, the Predators go for points in 19 straight games when the 43-25-4 Nashville Predators, good for 90 points, take on the 30-37-5 Arizona Coyotes, 65 points. Ian, do you remember? It feels like just yesterday the Predators and the Coyotes were neck and neck.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, goodness gracious.
Coyotes were right behind.
Unbelievable. They'll be playing at Mullett Arena, that college arena that I actually really want to go to a game in. Like a Predators-Arizona game, I guess, you know, I'm out of luck for this year. But I would really like to see what that's like. Anywho, the game is at 9 o'clock tonight. Max has the pregame at 8 o'clock as they get ready to take care of business. Here's what's important tonight for me, and that is watching the scoreboard. Because the Predators have a legitimate shot to catch up with Winnipeg. Winnipeg takes on Vegas tonight. I assume that that's probably a late start as well. But here's kind of all the little nooks and crannies. You know the Predators are going to make the playoffs. That, I think, is obvious at this point. I think they have a 99.8% chance of making the playoffs. A win, according to MoneyPuck.com, would put them at 100%.
But Vegas is in Winnipeg, so 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Okay. So you know, get basketball and that all at the same time. If right now, 4 points separate you. If they lose and you win, I mean, it's bang-bang right there, including one more matchup at home between the two teams to kind of settle who's going to be in the Central Division and who's going to have to be a wild card. Plus, Colorado takes on New York. I think you want Colorado to win. Dallas takes on Vancouver. You want Vancouver to win. So there is a lot of scoreboard watching to be done before Max comes on with the pregame show at 8 o'clock, which again includes Dallas and Vancouver, although that'll probably be a late game because it's in Vancouver. Colorado, New York, Vegas, and Winnipeg, they all affect you. And then, of course, you tonight going for points in 19 straight. That's it for us. Stillman and Company, the number one show in drive time here in Nashville. Coming up next will be a replay of our 2 o'clock hour. Stillman and Company, enjoy that. And we will see everybody tomorrow at 2.